Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden, true straight up. Julie?
Hey, the Chuck and Julie Show, brought to you by AmericaCitizenPress.com and Denver Cinegenics and Dr. Julie McCallan. In fact, you just got your lab results back from them, so you have to set up a whole other appointment with Dr. Julie McCallan. They're great over there.
They are great.
Yeah, Denver Cinegenics. Well, a lot going on today.
We're going to talk about the Tina Peters indictment at around the 3:30 to 3:40 mark, so you want to stay on for that. But right now, we have one of our favorite guests, Robert Spencer, Jihad Watch, an Islamic scholar. Robert, it's interesting times.
Yeah, and you look great, by the way. You're spiffier than us. It's like we need to up our game here a little bit.
Well, you know, this is fun. It's nice to see you after all these years talking.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, so I wanted to ask you, to me, I thought it was odd. So Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates are like refusing to even take Biden's phone call.
At least the heads are.
Yeah. Now, I know when I, you know, years ago, before I married Chuck, if I would date somebody and the guy wouldn't even answer the phone.
Not a good sign.
That was not a good sign. What do you make, as a Middle East expert, what do you make of the fact that they won't even pick up the phone?
There's two things. One is they know that Biden's weak. They know that America is in decline right now. That doesn't mean it can't come back. But right now, it's not a major player. And so they don't have to pay attention. Even just a year or two ago, this would have been unthinkable. The president of the United States is calling, you drop everything you talk to. But right now, it's Joe Biden. Yeah. The other reason is even more important in the long run, and that is that they know that Biden is totally in on Iran's side. Saudi Arabia and the UAE are Sunni states. Iran is Shiite. They're fighting a proxy war against each other in Yemen. And during the Trump administration, the Shiite Houthis, who were financed by Iran, were placed on the terror list. Biden comes in, he takes them off the terror list. He took a weapons system out of Saudi Arabia. He's working with Iran for a new nuclear deal. So he's made it very clear he's on Iran's side. The Saudis know that. The UAE knows that. And so they figure they don't have to deal with this guy.
Well, it seems that we don't have a lot of friends these days with Biden. I mean, Turkey is playing it neutral on the event. Syria is a Russian client state. I'm not sure. Iran wants us dead, but maybe they like Biden.
They want money.
And we're happy to give it to them for some terror operations. But it doesn't seem like we have a lot of friends in the Middle East, if we ever did.
No. And this is in large part because of Biden. You know, strength is respected and weakness is despised, especially in the Middle East. In Islamic culture, a lot of people see the world in terms of strength and weakness. The Iranian mullahs see the world in terms of strength and weakness. So they see Biden, they don't have any respect for him, and they don't feel as if they need to give him any consideration. Trump, it was another thing. It's just like with Putin. You know, he said, wouldn't it be a shame if you invaded Ukraine and all those golden turrets in Moscow, they go up in smoke. And Putin said, you wouldn't do that. No, with Trump, he couldn't. Yeah, sure. Yeah. And people say, "Oh, see, Trump is a loose cannon. This was terrible," but he didn't invade Ukraine, did he? Not until Biden came in.
You know, and I want to talk about the whole Poland jet thing here and what's really going on about that in a moment. But what you just mentioned about just the Biden's, I mean, they just seem clueless in terms of foreign policy. I mean, it seems to be that they don't even understand the Mideast and the whole Sunni Shia thing as well. I mean, I understand it like this much, but they seem to not even get it, that on the one hand, you would insult them like that and blow them off like that and completely disrespect them and then turn around and say, hey, Joe on the phone here, and somehow think that they're not going to like remember that. I mean, to me, that shows a complete lack of understanding of anything except their own fake narratives.
Yeah, you couldn't be more right. Because in first way they look at the world, like I said, with strength and weakness. The second way that they tend to look at the world in the Middle East is shame and honor. And when Joe Biden is backing up Iran and betraying our allies in Saudi Arabia. I'm not saying the Saudis are so great, but they have been our allies. Then the Saudis feel as if they've been dishonored. And that's it's a tremendous insult. And so they don't feel as if they owe him the slightest consideration in light of that as well.
Well, do you think we could send our secret diplomatic weapon and divert Kamala Harris to the Middle East to solve any of the problems and hurt feelings that might have been developed?
Well, she's done so well solving the southern border crisis.
Yes, excellent.
Well, what do you make of the whole, because I know you're not just a Mideast scholar, you're up on all things, international and foreign policy wise. What do you make of the whole situation in Ukraine?
Well, this is another example of what happens when you have a weak president. And it's very true. Putin has wanted Ukraine for years. It was part of the Soviet Union. He wants to reconstitute that, not the Soviet Union necessarily, but certainly Russian imperial, the Russian Empire that included Ukraine and Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia, Belarus, and so on. And so Trump told him, look, there are going to be terrible consequences if you do this. He knew with Biden being weak that there would not be. And so this invasion would not have happened and did not happen during the Trump administration for a very good reason. And it's happening now for obvious reasons as well.
What do you think Putin's goals are?
Well, he does want to, I think, get back Ukraine, Belarus, he essentially has already. Lukashenko, the president of Belarus, is essentially his client.
And he basically has Kazakhstan back. He's sending soldiers in there.
I'm not so sure. I don't know if he wants, because he's made Russia an Orthodox Christian state. Mm. And that's very interesting, because that puts the stands, as they're called, Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, they are in a peculiar position because, of course, they're primarily Muslim countries. So I know that he wants to dominate them politically, but not necessarily reincorporate them into the empire he envisions. But if I were in Estonia, Lithuania, and Latvia, I'd be plenty worried right now.
They at least were not traditionally parts of Russia. I mean, Lithuania and Poland was always fighting Russia, and it was, a pretty adverse relationship, and often were not part of Russia. I mean, Ukraine is the motherland of Russia, and certainly still has a quarter to a third of the population is Russian. But it's interesting. I'm not sure if you've seen Oliver Stone movie Ukraine on Fire, and like all Oliver Stone ones, they're pretty controversial. But boy, it has a lot of information.
It's been pulled up from YouTube. YouTube isn't.
Pulled from YouTube.
You can't watch it anymore. You have to go to Rumble. What about back to the whole Saudi and the oil picture? So we've got the United States. The CNN now says it's misinformation if you say that the United States, increasing domestic production won't help lower the price of gas. You've got Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates not even answering the phone to listen to Joe Biden grovel. Meanwhile, you've got Russia dominating the energy situation in Europe. How do you see all of this developing, and where does it go? And this is like a three-part question. And what are what do you think sort of the short-term and the long-term impacts on sort of the American consumer?
Well, I think it's going to get much worse before it gets better. And there's no telling how high gas could go. But Biden doesn't have, his obvious alternative is what he doesn't want to do. Right. And that is to undo everything he did in January 2021 to destroy the domestic oil industry, or to at least to drastically weaken it and to ruin the energy independence that Trump had brought to us. Right. And if he did that, he would lose his base, because his base, they're hardcore leftist greens and they want clean energy and so on. And so they're happy to buy oil from Iran and Venezuela because we don't see the environmental devastation there. But otherwise, there's no way. So he's really caught between a rock and a hard place. The Saudis and the UAE don't want to sell it to him unless he plays ball with them in Yemen. He doesn't want to do that because he wants to appease Iran. He can't deal with domestic oil and the domestic oil industry because the Greens will get angry with him. And he can't deal with Russia because Russia's invading Ukraine. So where's he going to get oil? He can't get oil anywhere. And so, I don't know, $15 a gallon, $20 a gallon, the sky's the limit.
Right. Well, that becomes a question. I mean, you hit on a point I have, is that what if you're the, it's just ridiculous to me that somehow we can't, you know, I was seeing Babylon Bee was tweeting, you know, Biden wants to sell Alaska back to Russia. So then we can drill there. Right. Somehow it's OK if we buy oil and gas from somebody else, but it producing ourselves, it's like bad somehow, which is ridiculous. But
you do have to understand. You do have to understand why. I mean, it's not. It's because climate change is a vehicle to our global socialist order. I mean, it's all their dreams wrapped up in one. Yeah. If it wasn't, they'd kind of go, well, let's drill for a while and then we can cut back. No, it's the dreams of everything. They're utopian. It's all based on that.
That's right. That's it right there. And so it's interesting to note that while gas prices are going through the roof and, you know, I'm thinking about what am I going to do? I'm going to buy a bicycle. I don't know how I'm going to get around. And Pete Buttigieg says, buy an electric car. And I think, oh, great. Yeah, I'll plunk down $70,000 for an electric car. And then Michael Regan, the head of the EPA, I don't know if you saw this. He said, we're putting the pedal to the metal on zero emissions future. We're accelerating it much faster than anybody thought. So in other words, they're using this crisis as an opportunity to destroy the internal combustion engine, to destroy the whole fossil fuels industry, and to bring us to their utopian electric future.
Right.
But, and you know, here's the thing, though.
Except how's electricity?
How
do you get electricity?
How do you get the electricity to plug your car in? It's like, how does that, and they ignore that.
Electricity just doesn't create itself. You need nuclear, you need hydro. Hydro, you need something. It just doesn't, it isn't just you put in, you know, plug your thing into the wall.
Magically. Well, and how does Saudi Arabia, I mean, so to me, I think you're right. I think it's going to get worse and there's no sign it's going to get better, because let's just say, even they convince us all to buy electric cars, like Chuck says, you still have the problem of, oh, you've got trucks and jets and that whatever gets the food to the grocery store and tractors that harvest the fields and all and fertilizer and all of that other stuff.
That's why they're allowing all the immigrants in.
I mean, and so, I mean, if you're Saudi Arabia, I would think in United Arab Emirates, you're like, it couldn't be, this is like Christmas time, only they don't have Christmas time.
Yeah, absolutely. Because they can write their own ticket. However much they want to charge, he's got to pay. Because what else is he going to do? Now, of course, if we had an America First president, we wouldn't even be in this problem.
Right.
Because
right.
He never would have shut down the pipeline. He never would have banned the fracking. He never would have done everything else he did to cripple the domestic production.
How does what's going on in Europe tie into all of this? The fact, I mean, how they allow themselves to have 60...
It does,
you interrupted me?
No, I didn't. I did. it's invasion. But I mean, you have Germany says it doesn't want to extend the SWIFT violation, the SWIFT sanctions to something called their bank or SER bank or something. You've got the Poland who is just kind of going, screw you, Blinken. And you do seem to have a lot of fractures, at least starting to develop in Europe.
Yeah. Well, this has caused a lot of Europeans to wake up and to say, maybe it wasn't such a good idea to depend on Russian oil.
I think Trump told them that.
Nuclear plants to placate the Greens.
Yeah.
Right. Well, how do they get
how that develops? I don't know that they'll open the nuclear plants again, but they're certainly starting to rethink a lot of the things they've taken for granted.
How do they undo it, though?
Well, you know, they would have to be a thoroughgoing repudiation of the whole political class in Germany and France and Britain and elsewhere. And then a reexamination of policies that have been in place for decades, particularly the phasing out of the nuclear. Because that's really the obvious solution to all their problems. And the nuclear energy was demonized. It was characterized as far more dangerous than it is. And now they're between a rock and a hard place because they're dependent upon Russia. And Russia's a belligerent power that threatens all of Europe.
Right.
Well, they got three more nuclear plants to deactivate in Russia, not Russia, in Germany. Do you think they'll do it?
You know, I think they probably will, because it's just too entrenched, the political class there, and these things have been in place for so many years. On the other hand, if things continue to get worse, and if the problem accelerates, if the war widens, then maybe not.
Mm. What about China? How do they play into all of this? And how to me, it seems like this is all working to China's advantage.
Oh, very much so. And, you know, of course, this is our fault. I'm not the kind of guy who blames America first, but when you talk about the rise of China, you got to go back to Richard Nixon opening up China, going over there. Everybody said, what a great statesman, what a tremendous achievement. But what it led to was the betrayal of a reliable ally in Taiwan, the replacement of Taiwan in the UN with the People's Republic, the legitimization of the People's Republic, which then led Bill Clinton to open up businesses to the People's Republic and outsource all of our, so much of our production to the People's Republic, so that now they're an economic giant. They have global designs. You look, it's incredible, actually. If you compare the a map of the 1980s of the biggest trading partner of each country in Africa and in Asia, most of them are the United States. You go to the same map, the biggest trading partner for each country in 2022, and it's mostly China.
Yeah.
And so what are we going to do about that? That's not really sustainable. And ultimately, it's going to come down to some kind of a conflict. And meanwhile, we're paying for it by being so economically tied to the People's Republic.
And thank God we had the Olympics there, too. I mean, for me, that was amazing. Well, to me, it seems like this is, I don't want to say dangerous. I mean, I think, yes, dangerous in terms of what's going on in Ukraine. But I mean, dangerous to the middle class way of life. I don't see how. Because, again, they talk about gasoline. But when you get right down to it, I mean, from the food, the whole supply chain, right, from growing the food to fertilizing the food, all of this is, to a certain extent, dependent, at least right now, on a lot of fossil fuels and things like that. And to just suddenly say, we're not going to do any of our own. We've got other countries out that aren't going to sell it to us, or if they are, it's going to be at an increasingly high price. I don't see how prices go down anywhere anytime soon.
No, I don't either, because everything that is making them go up is still going on.
Yeah.
And the same idiots who brought it all about are still in charge, applying the same wrongheaded policies. And
right.
So until we get an administration that is willing to stand up to the Greens and think about putting Americans first, the problems are only going to get worse.
Let me ask you a question I do not know the answer to. Maybe you do, but, you know, for the last 20 years, the nationalists in Ukraine, which are usually Ukrainian speakers in the western part of the country, some of which are virulently anti-Semitic, some are not, but some are virulently Semitic, and George Soros worked together to produce the, you know, the various revolutions, the Green Revolution, the Orange Revolution, and everything else. I mean, is it just politics make strange bedfellows, or what is it?
Well, it's a strange thing, you know. Zelensky, he's a great hero. Everybody is lionizing his courage, and justly so. At the same time, he's tied into the whole World Economic Forum.
Yeah.
He said one of the world leaders he admires most is Justin Trudeau. And Soros, as you noted, is very strongly on the side of Ukraine. That kind of thing, it makes me wonder. You know, the Biden administration, not the Biden administration, but Joe Biden, Hunter Biden was paid the cushy job in Ukraine.
Right.
For influence, obviously buying influence in the American government. And so you're talking about a strange regime that I'm not really sure is worthy of our support. I'm not justifying the invasion.
Right.
I'm not saying Putin's a good guy. I'm just not sure that either one of them are worthy of our support.
Well, you know,
we're talking with Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch.
Right. And I was, yeah, good point. Good job to reintroduce it. I was reading a thing the other day because I heard Colonel McGregor on Tucker Carlson talk about Zelensky being a puppet. And I was like, well, a puppet of whom? And then I read another thing that basically said a puppet essentially of the deep state and this whole globe in Washington, D.C. and the Uniparty that's pushing this whole green globalist agenda.
But in particular, the State Department and the ubiquitous Victoria Nuland, who seems to pop up everywhere and anywhere.
Because it was pointing out that there were many things that Zelensky and the West could have done to have possibly avoided this. And deliberately, the article was suggesting Zelensky was sort of poking the bear, the Russian bear, right? And that now we're shocked that this is happening. You just have a couple more questions. I do anyway.
Well, you gave him a question there.
I want to say,
why don't you let him talk?
Why? What do you make of that then?
Well, like I said, I don't think Zelensky is really the great guy that everybody says. I'm not saying he's not courageous. He's obviously courageous. He's obviously noble. He's obviously inspiring. But That doesn't mean that it's 100% white and black. Zelensky is tied into this globalist, socialist, internationalist agenda very clearly. And he's tied into the Bidens somehow in ways that we may never know.
Right, but it
makes me suspicious about what's really going on here. And I do wonder if that might be one reason why Putin invaded, because he sees Zelensky, I believe, as a U.S. puppet and as particularly a puppet of the Biden family, and consequently feels threatened in a very particular way. I mean, imagine if Putin had a puppet in Mexico, you know, was causing all kinds of trouble for the United States. We would not be very happy with that kind of an arrangement.
Well, we had that arrangement in 1960 when Khrushchev had a puppet with Castro. We tried to kill him. We tried to invade. We tried various things.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you, so it sounds, I mean, just sort of a bottom line question. Do you see, I mean, maybe the American electorate, I don't see anyone else really standing up to this globalist, you know, a cabal really that's happy to have gas prices go up. So like you guys have said, they can force their socialist dream on the rest of us.
No, not many people are realize. I think not many people are standing up to it because still most people don't realize what's happening. But on the other hand, there's been a tremendous learning curve since 2016. You know, I didn't know. Did you know in 2016? I thought Trump has been elected president in 2016. He will pursue his agenda. Yeah. I had no idea that there would be people in the government who would be obstructing him at every turn.
Yes.
But now we know. Now we know that there's this entrenched uniparty in Washington that is pushing its agenda regardless of who's in the White House. And so we have Trump to thank in a kind of backhanded way for inadvertently revealing what we're up against. And more and more people.
I think it's tough in times of war because the propaganda is so easy. I mean, right now they have the Russians bombing a hospital.
Maternity hospitals. It's like, now, filled, of course, with Ukrainian soldiers.
Well, maybe not, you know, but it's unlikely the Russians were conducting a terror campaign and decided, let's go after a maternity hospital. It's more like a Shelley. And it's a casualty of war, similar to our slaughtering that whole family of aid workers in Afghanistan, who was just doing water, but they thought it was he was a terrorist. So we killed him and his whole family and all the kids. And when the army investigated, they went, yeah, but, you know, that's the way things go. It's just, you know, huh? No, we're not going to admonish anyone. They got in the way. That's the way it goes. Yep. It is amazing, but it's very hard when all you ever see are claimed war atrocities. And of course, the best one everybody points to is the 1914 invasion of Belgium by Germany, which the British propagandists really made into a slaughter fest. And the Hun was putting babies on bayonets and everything else. None of it was true. Yes, it was an invasion. Yes, they military conquered and went on to France. But the campaign they ran is still admired by propagandists everywhere.
And imitated.
And imitated, yes.
It's virtually impossible to know right now what's really happening in this war, because the Ukrainians have lied. We have seen this several times. They remember that ship that was confronted by the Russian ship. And I can't repeat what they said, but everybody knows what they said.
Well, you can. We're not.
They were all killed, only they weren't all killed. Couple of days later, they all show up and they were captured by the Russians, and they were not a scratch on them. They didn't even resist.
Well, how about Miss Ukraine was going out there with an AK-47?
Hot Ukrainian babes in bikinis.
bikinis going to the front lines. So you want to sign up yourself.
All right, Robert, we got to let you go. Thank you so much.
Robert,
it's wonderful to see you.
Thank
I so appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks. It's a lot of fun talking to you folks. Have a great evening.
All right, you too. Thank you. Robert Spencer there with Jihad Watch. He is wonderful. And he perfectly segued into, we got Maurice Emmer coming on to talk about the Tina Peters situation.
Right.
And we're going to tell you what the rest of the media will not tell you about the whole thing. But in the meantime, I want to talk about the lies. We can kind of go through some of the lies. I want to start with the biolab. Remember the biolab? First, there rumors are starting to emerge that the United States has, you know, Russia has found biolabs that the United States was
conducting biological labs throughout the Ukraine.
Right, throughout the Ukraine. And the mainstream media, the White House, everybody denied it, and they called it Russian misinformation.
No, they said it's absurd, it's propaganda.
Well, they actually called it Russian.
Well, I know, I'm sure they did, but they said, this is too absurd it's for anyone to believe. This
not
is
even
just,
true at all. But then,
no.
That was yesterday. But here also is what came out yesterday from China. And Thomas, if we could please play the China soundbite.
Recently, the U.S. biological labs in Ukraine have indeed attracted much attention. According to reports, in these facilities, a large quantity of dangerous viruses are stored. Russia has found during its military operations that the U.S. uses these facilities to conduct military plans. According to data released by the U.S., it has 26 labs in Ukraine. The U.S. has 336 labs in 30 countries under its control. The U.S. has also conducted many biological military activities in Fort Detrick. What is the true intention of the U.S.? What has it done specifically? The international community has long held doubts. Once again, we urge the U.S. to give a full account of its biomilitary activities at home and abroad and accept multilateral verification.
Yeah, it's like maybe that's where Fauci is. They sent Fauci to a bio lab. Well, and so then,
well,
so now
he runs all the bio labs.
Really, and information is now coming out, and it started to trickle out yesterday about with Russians producing documents from the lab showing actually what was there. And so they must have, in the deep state, gotten word that this was going to come out, because we're going to play another soundbite. Listen to the weasel Marco Rubio, and then Victoria Nuland, the Obama,
the ubiquitous, they told him, all part of Russiagate. Was there part of the hoax
and
all the way through?
They clearly decided they had to get ahead of this old biolab story, which was absurd, not even remotely true, not true at all. Listen to this exchange. If you could please play the Rubio and Nuland soundbite, Thomas.
Well, I only have a minute left. Let me ask you, does Ukraine have chemical or biological weapons?
Ukraine has biological research facilities, which, in fact, we are now quite concerned Russian troops, Russian forces may be seeking to gain control of. So we are working with the Ukrainians on how they can prevent any of those research materials from falling into the hands of Russian forces should they approach.
I'm sure you're aware that the Russian propaganda groups are already putting out there all kinds of information about how they've uncovered a plot by the Ukrainians to release biological weapons in the country and with NATO's coordination. If there's a biological or chemical weapon incident or attack inside of Ukraine, is there any doubt in your mind that 100% it would be the Russians that would be behind it?
There is no doubt in my mind, Senator, and it is classic Russian technique to blame on the other guy what they're planning to do themselves.
No, wait a minute. Isn't that what she just did? It's classic Biden technique. It's classic Democrat technique to blame on the other what you're doing yourself.
Well, but you have to remember what the United States, when it finally said, oh yeah, there are some of these biological laboratories, research facilities, but they're just to help with the local health of animals and local health of people. They're local health.
It's promoters kind of like, and so forth. You know, you can get your I don't know, tetanus shot, say.
Yeah, I get tetanus shot there. But you may have noticed when she said, we are trying to prevent them from getting a hold of the papers that describe what's happening and destroying them. And you kind of go, well, if all you're doing is helping the local people, why would you need to destroy those papers? They're just innocent, fine kind of things. I mean, and then all go, no, destroy them. Don't let them out. God.
They made it sound like it's like prenatal care or something. You could get them. And then Ruby
but destroy all your records on prenatal care.
Well, and he said, and if there's a biological hazard release, what are they going to release? The prenatal care vitamins? It's like, give me a break. What a bunch of weasel heads, right? It's like.
Oh, I just got one more question.
This just came to me.
God, what was the detective? Oh, yeah.
Columbo.
Let's have one more Columbo. have one more question for you. I only have
it's just weaseliness. And so China is, you know, again, it's why not just go ahead and say to me, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked that the military has biohazard. And I mean, I'm kind of surprised that Ukraine would let them do it in their country. I would say, well, why don't you do it in, you know, your country?
Because somebody probably got paid off.
Well, because they don't have as many rules and regulations. And like you said,
well, I'm sure they're not subject to the rules and regulations.
What? I mean, but so keep
it. Rules and Ukrainian rules and regulations. Those babies are tough. Local zoning controls.
This is exactly, Charlene. Little Marco and Newland playing footsies in the Senate hearing. Nothing but damage control because the word is out. And then the projection onto Russia. Exactly. And here's another thing that we wanted to explain. If you look at the mainstream media, there seems to be a lot of confusion and controversy about what's going on with this whole Poland fighter jet thing. Well, what's going on is that, once again, the Biden administration completely ineptly basically forced this international crisis, and Poland said, hey, we're not going to play that. We're not going to get bombed by Russia. So what happens is, you know, Biden is under a lot of pressure. We should be doing more. Zelensky is out there saying, thank you for your sanctions, but we need weapons. We need MiG jets, things like that. Well, Biden knows and NATO knows, everyone knows that if we, have a no-fly zone, if we start sending our fighter jets to Ukraine, then Russia would put a stop to that. And then we'd have to react. I mean, it's a bad way to go. And they don't want to go that way. So Blinken, apparently, without even checking with Poland, says, we have decided, and it's been okayed, that we're going to go ahead and we're going to send all of a bunch of fighter jets to Poland. And then they're going to operate out of Poland and take down Russian jets in Ukraine. They're going to be flying in and out of Poland.
Well, we don't have the soundbite, but there's talk about underneath the table, Margaret Brennan talking with.
We do have that.
Oh, Blinken. Okay.
So
oh,
here's
good.
Blinken. So, but to set it in context, Poland immediately, like literally, sends out a text saying, this is fake news. There's no
literally
deal here.
Fake news.
Literally fake news. And then the Biden administration, ever since, and has been trying to save face by sending Kamala Harris there. But so this is Blinken saying, oh, yeah, we've got this great idea. We're going to put a target on Poland's back, and they're cool with it.
Listen to this exchange, which was worked out well.
Well, oh, yeah, like she just thought of this question.
Oh, I've got
too.
One more question for you.
If we could play the Blinken soundbite, please.
Said none of its 30 members are willing to set up a no-fly zone. President Biden has been very clear. He has no interest in that or combat troops. But what more can the United States do here if, for instance, the Polish government, a NATO member, wants to send fighter jets? Does that get a green light from the U.S., or are you afraid that that will escalate tension?
No, that gets a green light. In fact, we're talking with our Polish friends right now about what we might be able to do to backfill their needs. If, in fact, they choose to provide these fighter jets to the Ukrainians, what could we do? How can we help to make sure that they get something to backfill the planes that they're handing over to the Ukrainians? We're in very active discussions with them about that.
Total lie.
Total lie.
Total lie.
Total lie. Did you notice the word she used, which was planted? What if Poland, say, wants to send the jets? Well, Poland didn't want to send the jets for obvious reasons. Russia made that clear. Russia immediately issued a statement saying, hey, if you send jets to Poland and operations start coming out of Poland, attacking us in Ukraine, well, we'll just attack there. I mean, and Poland got that, right? So Poland immediately issues a statement, which did not get played up in the mainstream media, saying, no, that's not true. We're no one talk. What do you mean, our friends in Poland, right? It's
Poland.
Like, no, we're not going to do that at all. But rather than just admit, okay, sorry, miscommunication, the Biden administration stuck by that. So what did Poland do?
Oh, this is
they
great.
Called the bluff. This is so smart, but it is a slap in the face to the Biden administration, State Department. Poland said, oh, we know. We have a whole bunch of extra MiGs. What we'll do is we'll send them we'll give them to you, the United States, and we'll send them all the Ramstein Air Force Base in
and
Germany.
You can do whatever
right?
you want from
and
there.
You can fly the attacks on Russia out of there.
Or anywhere else. Do whatever you want. They're your planes now.
Yeah. Hey, that's
you,
cool.
You don't have to give us any in exchange. We're already
just
sending.
Give you those.
Give you the change. And the only person who got this was Sundance at Conservatory House. The minute that came out, whatever. So Poland's trying to, you know, they Poland's said fake news war. He said, oh, this is great. They're just bitch slapping them to death.
Well, they are, because then the Pentagon is forced to say, who clearly had no idea what Blinken's even talking about, the Pentagon, because I'm sure the folks in Germany are like, no, you're not flying. You're not flying out of Ramstein Air Force Base. For the
not
same
running
concerns,
an operation out of
same
Germany.
Same concerns that Poland had, exactly. And so then the Pentagon is like, well, that doesn't seem like a very good idea.
Not
I don't
tenable.
Know.
Not tenable. We're not sure the rationale for that. The rationale is the point that you're lying scum.
Exactly. And you're trying to force Soros. So, you know, our support for Ukraine, this is true, Jim, is akin to giving your friend a knife to take to a gunfight. Exactly.
Yeah.
And from Charlene, it's nothing but intelligence media, not even mainstream media, you know. And then this from Dr. Donna, yeah, he'd send in Kamala Harris, ha, ha, ha. Soros has said support Ukraine. You know, but again, the whole thing is, to me, it shows two things. One, just a complete ineptness. You look at like Robert Spencer was explaining, you know, we slap Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates in the face, and then we go begging to them, and we're surprised when they won't even take our phone calls. Okay. Then without talking to Poland, we say, you know what, we're going to put a giant target on your back because it makes us look good. It makes us sound tough. And all right, you may get destroyed by Russia in the process, but hey, what's that in, you know, when compared to us looking tough, right? Yeah. I mean, do you know what our poll numbers are? And so, you know, so they do that. And then Poland, our friends, say, screw you, you know, and they send back and they go, we got a great idea. We'll just give you the planes and we'll send them all the...
You don't have to give us any back.
Yeah, yeah, we'll send all the Ramstein and you can operate out of
here.
They're
old planes anyway.
It's just, it shows this degree of incompetence, and I go back
arrogance,
and I go back to the underlying problem we have here. It's the same thing with the Green New Deal, the lefties, the Biden administration, this whole thing. In their world, the virtual world is more real to them than the real world. So they think they can simply say there are no biolabs. And then when it turns out there are biolabs, say, well, okay, they're biolabs. We're worried about, right? I mean,
but they're friendly, but they're just to help the local health authorities, and they're really run by these other countries. We may facilitate and help them a little bit for their health needs, but if they get a hold of the papers and stuff, they've got to be destroyed.
You know, and masks
the research has to be destroyed.
Yeah, you know, I mean, masks work. Hey, the gasoline prices are Putin's fault. Never mind the fact that they were up 48% at Christmas time, well before
any of this
was going on.
Well, it's gone down since the war started.
I mean, but it is alarm. What particularly concerns about this is, though, it's not so much that they believe their lies. They just believe that they can say and do anything as long as they can get away with it.
And then they can catch, get away with it.
And well, we have to be constantly, it's exhausting, vigilant because, you know, they'll say it. And then if nobody pushes back, then they'll just do it, right? I'm sure if Poland hadn't said, wait, what? Do you know what I mean? And Russia hadn't said, well, we'll just bomb you.
We say Blinken just go, aren't I cute?
Oh, we look so tough. And look at that nice Mara CBS correspondent.
Thank you, Margaret.
Yeah. What a great question. Like she just thought of it. Our friends say Poland want, I mean, but they lie and they have no concept of the truth being something real in and of itself.
Unlike the Clintons who were good liars, a lot of these people are not good liars.
Well, because they don't think it matters, right? Because they just think the only thing that matters is the narrative. The only thing that matters is the story. And they, I mean, that's why they don't correct the stories anymore. Hunter Biden laptop and, you know, the bio labs, Russian misinformation, the Trump thing, doesn't matter. And they just immediately turn to the next lie. And you keep thinking,
but
they're not going to stop, I guess, is my point.
It's not good if you're a liar.
No.
And Clinton would have done better. They ask you, what about the oil prices? You don't go, it's all Putin, when you know it's not Putin. And everybody knows it's not Putin. Yes, there are enough dumb liberals out there go, oh, it's all Putin.
Right.
But there are enough other people. I mean, you can say something like, well, this has been exacerbated by the war, and we're working as hard as we can. You don't go, it's all Putin. Oh, that's Putin.
Well, and here are some of the comments here from our folks in the chat section. Germany is sending helmets from Charlene. Hey, Charlene, you'll be glad to know that Jared Polis announced that Colorado is sending bulletproof vests.
All right.
Yay.
From his personal collection.
Yeah, where's he getting them from?
From his personal collection.
From Costco? I mean, where are they going? this is interesting. UAE, Saudi, Brazil, India, not supporting the United States. Neither is South Africa. I mean, China, let's not even go there. And then Marco is uniparty along with Graham, but they haven't another trip planned to Sea Island. Exactly. I mean, that's where. Hey, and then Thomas, if you want to go ahead and call Maurice now too, and we can move on to that when we get him on the phone. But it is, you know, like I said, they just lie, and their lies between COVID and this are constantly exposed, and they just keep on lying.
COVID and this, everything. I mean, just everything. I mean, there's Russia. It doesn't matter the time of day. They're lying about it.
But, you know, it is, I don't think when push comes to shove that at a certain point, Americans aren't going to care who's to blame for the gas prices. They're just going to say, we're going to put somebody else in to fix it. I was talking to one of our clients at the newspaper today, right? And he was saying, he's a painter, great painter, dance painting, by the way.
Dance painting, good.
Dance painting.
Good.
And he said, you know, he has not had any calls. And he said, he's concerned that he thinks what's happening, he said, with gas prices going up, which he says affects him. He says, I drive all of my jobs, right? And he said that people are sitting tight. He said, you know, people are sitting tight right now. They're not sure what's going on. And then he himself noticed, he said, you know, I don't go to the grocery store. I'm not a big grocery store guy, but he said, I can't believe the last time I went, the grocery prices. I mean, when everybody is noticing this, you can't not notice how fast it's going up. I think that it is going to be, I don't think that it's going to matter to the, you know, to polling.
We got conned into lots of wars and lots of things in which, you know, whether it's the War of 1812, the Mexican-American War, I mean, just the Spanish-American War, you know, it's just, war. Yeah, we're a peace country in London, but they bombed the USS Maine, I think, you know, that's it. Let's go to war.
Well, you would also think that at a certain point, you look at the polls and Democrats are fleeing, independents are fleeing the Biden administration. At a certain point, even if you're a little lefty and you think that somehow you're elite and this isn't going to affect you, you would think that you would notice prices are going up and you would be like, well, I don't want, it shouldn't
all
be
right,
my
well,
prices.
Well, we've got Maurice on line three. So if we could bring him up.
Hey, Maurice, hey, thank you for joining our show today. We called you at the last minute, so I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, I'm happy to help you out. I just happened to be on the other line with one of our state reps when you called, so it's timely.
Oh, perfect. Well, what do you have? Okay, so we wanted
Ron
to
Hanks?
Talk to you.
Would it be Ron Hanks?
I don't think I'm at liberty to say since I don't have the permission. Okay.
Okay, we wanted to talk to you, though, about the Tina Peters. As folks don't know, Mesa County clerk and recorder who's been under siege by the stupid corporate media, by Jenna Griswold, by all the minions of the progressive left, really.
And the corporate right.
And the establishment, that's right, was indicted today. And they make it sound terrible for election tampering and this and this. And
seven felonies.
And then they burglary her associate, all this stuff. And what I've been saying is they make it sound so awful. And first of all, I think that this is clearly almost a terror campaign against her. They've raided her house. They knocked, FBI knocked in the door of Sharona Bishop. None of that necessary, right? They arrest her in public. I mean, it's just insanity. But Maurice, I mean, I understand you've had some meetings with Tina Peters. And am I right in that you're involved in the lawsuit that's been filed against Jenna Griswold, using, among other things, evidence that Tina Peters has against the Secretary of State? Can you just kind of fill us in on what you think people need to understand about this?
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to try to clear up some of the confusion, and there's a lot of confusion. So I'm a retired lawyer. My only role in this is as a legal advisor on some of the litigation. So there's a limit to what I can say because some of what I'm privy to is confidential, but I think I can tell you enough to be helpful. I've at least read the indictment. I wonder how many members of the press who have issued articles and statements and so forth have even bothered to read the indictment. I just finished
reading
it.
I'm going to go with zero, but go ahead.
Yeah. And the here's the interesting thing I took away from it. So the allegations in the indictment are all about, Peters and her deputy, Belinda Nicely, having had conversations with members of the Secretary of State's election staff and some of her, some of the staff in Mesa County, in which Peters was trying to get agreement to allow the public to observe the trusted build. Do you guys know what the trusted build is?
No.
Okay. So when Dominion has a new version of its software to install on the machines in 62 of the 64 counties in Colorado, it sends a team around of Dominion employees and Secretary of State employees to install it on the servers and on the systems in the counties. That's done by people from Dominion and the Secretary of State. Certain county officials can observe and be present, but it's a limited number. Peters, according to the indictment, Peters was requesting repeatedly of various state officials permission to allow the public to observe it because she thought that would increase public confidence in the integrity of the system, and she was repeatedly denied permission to do so. Now, in fairness, there are rules. Secretary of State has rules that prohibit that, so Peters was asking for a variance from the rules, but I don't see that's a crime. It just didn't appear to me that's a crime to keep asking. But that's what they recite in the indictment as a basis for charging her with crimes. And then there are some other charges relating to allegations that either Peters or Nicely or both of them obtained some security credentials, you know, like a key card pass,
right,
into the election equipment area. Under false pretenses and allowed someone other than the person to whom the credentials were issued to use it. And I don't know the truth or falsity of any of that, but those are allegations that are in
the
indictment.
Let me zero in on that, because they make it sound like election tampering, right? They make it sound like, oh, she was going in and changing the results is the implication. But really, and like I said, I don't know the laws on that, like you said, but really all she was doing was going in and essentially backing getting an image of the files, backing them up to give to our own cybersecurity experts, right, before the Dominion people came in and wiped it clean. Because she wanted to do an audit, and Jenna Griswold won't let her do an audit.
Well, let's talk about what's in the indictment. So the indictment does recite, it says a couple of things about that. One, it says that the Secretary of State issued some suggestions to the clerks about what to back up from the system. And it says that a full image is not what they were suggested, that what was suggested. And that's true. As far as I know, that's true. But that doesn't mean that the clerk didn't have the authority to make a full image.
Right.
And the indictment brings no charges whatsoever relating to the images. None. You know, that's what this whole thing is about.
It's about. That's what it's about. So they don't.
And I kept going down paragraph by paragraph, wondering, well, when do I get to the meat of this thing? You know, where are they going to charge her with some crime because she took images? And then I reached, thank you, this is the end of the indictment. So it's like a big nothing burger from that point of view.
Well, they keep calling her an election denier, too. And one other thing I think that's important to point out, and that is that Tina Peters, along with some other people, are suing the Secretary of State over the whole thing. So it'd be kind of like if I was suing Chuck, claiming he wasn't doing his job right, and he turned around and essentially used his authority to get me indicted. I mean, it seems like
Well, you do that in divorces. Divorces, you do that a lot. You accuse the other spouse of child abuse and everything else, and you know, because there's no holes barred. But I haven't figured out, and maybe you have, why the county commissioners, why the DA seem to just revel in Gina and
Tina.
The Secretary of State, Jenna Griswold, and the Democrats. Plans and everything else. I mean, do you understand it from your perspective?
No, I do not understand it except for one thing I'm pretty sure of, and that is hardly any of them have read any of the relevant law. I mean, they're all acting on emotion, and it looks to me like it has the earmarks of like a herd instinct thing, right?
Yes.
You know, like,
yes.
Okay, I want to be on the successful side of this, And it looks to me like the successful side is against Tina. And so I just, and people are looking out to cover their own asses, and they're not upholding the law. And I'm not accusing anybody of violating law. But I am accusing people of not having read it or understand a lot of the law that applies here.
Well, I don't get. I mean, we've just gone through Wisconsin, where you had a Supreme Court retired one give a report saying the Wisconsin Election Commission violated its duties, where there was nursing home fraud, everything else. Zero indictments, zero arrests, zero everything. All the Democratic DAs go, "Oh no,
that's
old news," and so forth. But if you at all try to question there, then you're indicted. I mean, it's just amazing how we have a bipartite world where if Republicans question, they're indicted. If Democrats violate the law,
that's okay.
So you mentioned other litigation, and actually Tina hasn't sued, as far as I know.
Okay.
I don't think she's sued the secretary. She has filed counterclaims against the secretary.
Okay.
There's separate litigation in which two county clerks and three county commissioners have sued Secretary of State, alleging that the voting systems used in every county in the state are illegal for two main reasons. One is they weren't tested by a federally accredited laboratory, and the second is they don't comply with the Federal Election Commission standards that are required under state law. And that is a case. That's a really serious, important case, because that's a case that could result in the public finding out whether the systems really are lawful. Now here's a curious thing about that case. That was brought by those five public officials I mentioned, and if I were the Secretary of State who's gone around claiming that we have the gold standard and everything's copacetic and no problem, I'd go, great, this is the perfect opportunity to prove once and for all that there's no problem. So let's go to trial, and we'll persuade the jury that there's no problem. But that was not her reaction. Her reaction has been to fight it and to try to get it dismissed. Now, what does that sound like to you? Sounds to me like they've got stuff to hide.
Well, exactly. And it sounds like they're using Tina Peters or trying to use her as an example and saying to any other clerk, hey, you want to mess with me and what my narrative, then I'll throw the whole force of everything against you.
I assume that this is bringing charges or state charges.
They are. They were brought entirely by the DA's office in Mesa County. They were not. Interestingly, the Attorney General's office did not participate in the indictment. Although they do have the authority, concurrent authority to do that. But this was all brought by the Mesa County DA's office.
Who is a Republican. It's just an amazing, and I have to say, since you're not going to get in front of anybody who is appointed by a Republican, because the entire judiciary, other than a few senior judges, is Democrat, and I don't hold a lot of faith in our legal system these days, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I'm not sure I have a lot of faith in Republicans either. I mean, the fact
I would agree.
And R by his name. If you know anything about Mesa County or, any other of these counties, El Paso would be another one. The fact that everybody in public office has an R by his name doesn't tell you anything about his politics. They know that in those counties to get elected, you better have an R by your name. And that's about the extent of it.
All right. Well, Maurice, listen, you have been great. We'll have to get you back on again, because I think we want to follow this. It's very hard if you just read the mainstream or lamestream media to get to the bottom.
Yours was very educational. Yes. I really appreciate it.
And I need to go read the indictment now. All right. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
You have a great day, guys.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you. And I want to thank, I see Peg Cage is listening on Zoom. I want to thank Peg Cage. Peg Cage today basically served as our booking agent and our promotion agent. So she helped us get in touch with some of the key people here. And thank you to everybody for their comments. Hey, that's going to wrap it up for us today.
Robert Spencer, I want to thank him too.
That's right. And thank you to the great guys at BBS. Thank you to everyone on Zoom. Catch all of our shows.
And you know what's coming up, as always.
Party Friday. We'll see you then.